This is KYUK, public radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Samantha Watson. The Meals to You program is an ongoing partnership between school districts and the Food Bank of Alaska to ensure kids in rural communities have access to food when school is not in session. Gillian McPherson is the child nutrition manager at the Food Bank of Alaska. She says the meals are shipped directly to qualifying families, with more than 34 school districts participating.
Perfect program for Alaska because this is a way for children to get summer food service programs in rural Alaska. And so this is able to reach those children in the communities that have 12 people, no buildings, people are away at fish camp. So this bridges that gap.
Last summer, the program delivered more than 1 million meals to nearly 9,000 kids. Families who qualify can receive meal boxes with 5 breakfasts and 5 lunches per child, shipped to their house or local post office throughout the summer. There are some requirements, and interested families should visit the Food Bank of Alaska website. The last day to apply for the summer program is April 30th. Amidst a sea of 11 other Republican gubernatorial candidates, Shelley Hughes argues that she stands out as not, quote, Anchorage-centric. At a campaign event in Sitka last week, she said she's lived in several communities across the state, including Hoonah, Bethel, and her current home in Palmer.
Part of my heart is in every region where I've lived, and I've heard from people in Southeast and the different communities I've visited. We get forgotten by the governor. The governor gets in, they come down here and campaign, and then they forget about us. I will not forget about you. I've got family in this area, and you're important. Every region of the state has something to contribute and is important. And I'm ready to step up and offer my skill set to Alaskans.
Hughes has served 4 years as a state representative and over 8 years as a state senator for the Southern Mat-Su Borough. She says that her decade plus of experience in bipartisan collaboration makes her a suitable leader to collaborate with a president as, quote, pro-Alaska as Trump. Hughes is currently vetting lieutenant governor candidates, hoping to have them take on more responsibility in helping lead her initiatives in a way that she says, quote, hasn't happened since territorial days. One of her top priorities as governor would be to diversify Alaska's economy away from oil and lean into alternative energy sources like geothermal and hydroelectric power. She also says changes are needed for the Alaska Marine Highway System, which has uncertain funding and declining ridership. Hughes says local partnerships could help.
But I think if we did a private partnership and maybe had restaurants or bands or things like that on the ferries, people might choose it as an alternative. I think we could get some more independent travelers, and I think there's a revenue stream there. And under the state DOT, they don't have the flexibility to do that kind of thing. But I would also look at where does it make sense as far as shortening routes by putting in some roads where we can, so we can have a good system that meets the needs.
On top of education, Hughes believes there should not only be better funding to support teachers, but also vocational training programs. She says schools should also help students prepare for a wide variety of high-paying jobs the state offers that don't require a college degree. Hughes says this is important, given that 1 in 3 Alaskans is on public assistance and Medicaid.
I've heard from employers who've offered them raises because they're good workers, and they turn it down because they're going to lose their Medicaid, for example, and they need their insurance for their families. And that's a broken system, so we need to go in there and fix that system and make sure those people have opportunity for the kind of jobs where they can make the kind of money that you can live and afford a home, afford your groceries.
Regarding environmental regulation, Hughes hopes to hire a fish and game commissioner who shares her perspective on balancing environmental and development concerns. Hughes says she plans to increase trawling restrictions and increase game so that rural Alaska Native residents can participate in subsistence hunting, regardless of where in the state they choose to live. Hughes says she wants to partner with federal agencies to develop preventative measures for natural disasters brought on by global warming. On the flip side, she's also optimistic about the agricultural department opportunities that a warmer climate could bring.
Scandinavia is on the same latitude on the globe that we are. Now, they have a warm ocean current, so it's a little warmer. But their export for ag products and food is $10 billion a year. We import, so we're going the other direction, we're importing $3 billion. And so I see a lot of potential there. And when, with a little bit of warming, we can take advantage of that.
Hughes says that more agricultural work opportunities could also attract a wide variety of working-age people to Alaska. Hughes also talked about transferring government-owned land to private owners, infrastructure development, optimizing the state budget, and public safety reform during her two-day-long stay in Sitka. The Yamanik Women's Shelter is preparing for a major upgrade. A new building will expand the shelter's ability to serve women, children, and elders experiencing domestic violence and other forms of abuse in the region. KNOM Ben Townsend traveled to Yamanik for the story.
The Yamanik Women's Shelter first took shape in the late 1970s. The shelter's executive director, Joanne Horn, has been involved with it for nearly three decades, first as someone in need.
I'm a survivor of domestic violence. I ended up there at the shelter program when it first began with the ladies that started that.
After helping hundreds of women and children, the exact timeline of those early days is a bit foggy for Horn, but she remembers starting part-time around 1987, then expanding her role to full-time in 1994.
I never thought I'd operate that. Because of the experience I went through, I wanted to help.
Over the years, the shelter has grown from a small operation with just three staff members to 14. The shelter is now open 24 hours a day and has full-time adult, children, and elder advocates along with support staff. Yamanik is considered a sub-hub with three other communities able to fly direct to the village. But Horn says the shelter serves the entire Lower Yukon region. And if the shelter gets a call from a nearby village, Horn says the shelter pays for the flight to Yamanik and even books a charter if no seats are available. The shelter's current building has just three bedrooms and one shared bathroom, making space extremely limited. But Horn says they rarely turn anyone away.
We say 10 at capacity, but we can't say no when we have walk-ins or overnight. One time, there was about 27 total. That was the fullest I ever saw.
The village of Yamanik sits on an offshoot of the Yukon River, known as Quiguk Pass. It's also just 10 miles from the Bering Sea, putting it at risk of storm surges like during last year's ex-typhoon Halong.
And then this storm came and it was bank to bank. The water was bank to bank and the waves were splashing over the bank. I kept coming to see if it's going to reach the shelter or not.
Those threats, along with space limitations, led the shelter to begin plans for a new facility, which is expected to break ground next summer. It'll be much further inland, safe from storm surges and away from one of Yamanik's busiest roads. Design has already begun, with a single-story floor plan in the works. The new building will have 5 to 6 bedrooms, multiple bathrooms, and dedicated space for children and staff. Horn admits leaving the current shelter is bittersweet. She plans to hold a closing ceremony to honor the history and healing that has taken place over its four decades of service.
That building has lots of stories. The walls have lots of stories. Each room. Like, I want to let everything go and do some kind of really good opening ceremony, blessed ceremony, so the work will be carried on in a good way.
Horn expects construction to begin in 2027, with the building ready to open by 2028. With reporting from Yamanik in Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
This is KYUK News. I'm Samantha Watson. Koyana for listening. Please share your news tips, comments, or suggestions. You can email us at news@kyuk.org or message us on Facebook. And stay tuned for Yutun Gnomchit coming up.